Welcome to episode 112 of Conversation Street, the only podcast dedicated to the British soap institution Coronation Street. I'm Michael.
And I'm Gemma.
And this week we'll be discussing the episodes broadcast in the UK between the 1st and the 5th of September 2014. Back to school time. Back to school time for Max. Back to school time for me.
Yeah.
Simon has gone to Weatherfield High this week.
Aww.
Sad times indeed.
For them.
Some people just don't get somewhere up until the...
Some people don't have to worry about this because they don't get 5 weeks off.
Six.
All right, 6 weeks. Whenever I say six, you usually correct me and say five.
No, it's just about six. It's going to be five next week. Next year, I mean.
Next week. Yeah.
Our teachers had so easy. No, that's what I've been doing this week. What's been the highlight of your week?
Eating pancake syrup.
Yeah, so about a week ago then. Have you been sneaking it during the week?
No, I had some ice cream, but what do you mean sneaking it? It's in the fridge.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we're still on our diet, aren't we? Still going. How long have we got left? Week?
I don't know.
Doing good.
I'm on a diet.
Losing weight. We're managing it, it's okay. Coronation Street is weird tonight, with the lamp.
Yes.
I don't think there's anything else we're going to say about it in the street talk. It was just a very bizarre missing lamp.
It was obscure joke.
Yeah, well, the whole of tonight's episode I thought was a bit weird because that cricket stuff was pretty awful.
You don't like cricket, so it doesn't...
Well, the scenes were like...
What could they possibly have done in a cricket storyline to impress you? Go on, cricket's boring, should we play Nintendo?
Yeah, that would have been good, I'd like that. No, I thought it was weird. That lamp thing was weird, but we got to the bottom of it, didn't we?
Well, you did, yeah.
I did, that lamp that came from Tracy's bedroom, the people that had seen it, all the people who'd she taken up to her bedroom.
That was the joke. I didn't get it.
That was a joke. Just in case there's anyone else, like Gemma.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't get the joke. There it is. Right. Gemma, what happened in Coronation Street history this week?
75 years ago, apparently, there was World War II on the show. No, there wasn't. Cause it wasn't around. Sam Burgess, and Alice Hewitt's wedding reception was interrupted by Chamberlain's radio broadcast announcing it.
How rude.
Very inconsiderate.
That must have been on one of the old books.
That's not cricket.
45 years ago, since Albert Tatlock's wedding to Alice Perkins is called off at the last minute when she pulled out, although she still went to Morecambe on the honeymoon on her own.
Good for you. Why not? 30 years since Debbie Webster was involved in a motorbike crash and going out with somebody that Bill had forbidden her to see.
Mm. And she's not dead. She just hasn't been mentioned for nearly 30 years.
Maybe she's in a coma.
Yeah, maybe.
And 25 years since Wendy Crozier was sacked from the council for allegedly leaking details to the press, and Ken had hired her to the Weatherfield Recorder.
No, Ken then did hire her to the Weatherfield Recorder, yes. Which Deirdre didn't like, and that kind of was the end of Ken and Deirdre. For a little bit. No, nothing in recent memory happened in Coronation Street this week.
It was a pretty boring week.
Yeah, pretty boring week this week. Well, did this week do any better? Let's see.
Let's find out.
In
Street Talk.
Oh, right, Street Talk time. Yeah, I wasn't incredibly impressed with Coronation Street this week. There was no gym this week.
I liked the stuff with Peter confessing.
Yeah, that was good.
Not confessing.
Well, no, Carla offering, putting
yeah,
two that, and two
that
together.
Was good. That, was that, good.
That was good. That was a really cool cliffhanger on
Although
Wednesday.
Although I thought, yeah, it happened on Wednesday. I thought, oh, Friday's going to be good.
No, she was just deciding whether to tell anyone.
They decided to go more down the cricket route, which was a bold move,
yeah,
considering the plot.
Didn't quite pay off, but yeah, no, that was good. I was just sad that there was no gym. So our Barlow in the Big House storyline,
I'm so confused every time you say gym, because we're supposed to be losing weight. I keep thinking of the gym.
There wasn't any of that gym in it. Oh no, there was a little bit of that gym in it today, wasn't there? But yeah, Barlow wasn't in the Big House this week. He was in the hospital, but still the story title remains. We also had some Tycoon Todd, and Todd wasn't really in it much this week either. It was more about Tyrone's fall and the discovery that these flooring floorboards were actually...
Don't spoil it. And we had Mad Max. Not so mad anymore, now he's drugged up.
No, he's
all
right.
Should be the other way around.
Kylie
hey,
is still going a bit...
Is there going to be anything to do with people selling his pills?
Well, there could be. It's
I hope
case.
So. The overs return,
oh
as we mentioned.
Oh, that was boring. the best bit about that... No, I'll wait until we actually get there, because there's only about one good thing about that storyline. Lucchetti.
Yeah, but that's not what it should be called. It
cake.
Cake.
Well, the cake's part of our next
That's over
fun.
Now. That's over.
Yeah, that was like a bit of nothing, wasn't it, that storyline? There is cake in our next pun, though, because we have named the Beth and wedding storyline.
Beth and Kirk wedding storyline.
Storyline after what they call wedding cake up north.
And what would that be, Michael?
Wedding Kirk. Kirk.
What a pun. Is it a pun? I don't know.
I don't know.
Right, so let's get on with it. Barlow in the big house.
Yeah, so what happened last week? I think we ended with Peter in hospital in intensive care, didn't we, after he'd discovered Jim's booze.
Mm.
And I wanted to know what the fallout in the hospital of that was. Not the hospital, the prison of that was.
I haven't found out about that. I don't know if we will.
Is Jim going to get in trouble about it?
I don't know if they want to go down that route. Well, you think they would have done it already?
You'd have thought so,
but
hopefully he'll be back soon. But how long do you reckon he'll be back in hospital until he's been back in jail? Don't know how it works. Maybe they'll let
Tracy's telling Rob, who's obviously so concerned about this future son, brother-in-law, if Peter dies, she doesn't think Ken will be much long after him because he's so concerned about Peter's welfare.
It was nice to see some genuine concern for Peter from Tracy. They're quite different, but still close. And they're not even proper brother and sister.
The thing about Tracy is that she can balance so perfectly many emotions in her brain at once. So she can be worried about Peter, but at the same time not really care and want to get married and have a party.
Well, what did
and,
you...
it do- and it never really sort of makes her feel it... I mean, she's really shallow, isn't she? All of her feelings are really shallow. So you never feel that it's not genuine because she really doesn't have many genuine emotions. So when she feels like sorry... for Peter, it's like over in 5 seconds.
Yeah, because
that's as long as she can concentrate on something that doesn't involve her.
I don't know whether she does want to just have this wedding to kind of take the family's mind off Peter. I guess that comes onto Wednesday, doesn't it?
Yeah, wait for that. So
yeah, the Monday's episode at the beginning was all to do with Carla. Well, the whole of Monday's episode, wasn't it? It was about Carla finding out. So it was Beth that told her in the end, wasn't it? She came into the factory late because she'd been talking to Tracy and Carla's... She doesn't know what to make of it, really, because obviously she's still married to the man, yet he had an affair with a little orange tart, and she doesn't know whether to sort of rush to his bedside or head off on holiday.
Rob tells her that you don't need to worry about what Peter's going through. You need to move on with your life. You need to get away, and if you're lucky, by the time you get back, he'll be dead.
Yeah.
And all the way through this, Tracy's concerned with this wedding fair that she wants to go to, and she calls... chocolate fountains tacky.
I know, we had two
at our wedding tacky. Because we wanted, what did we, did you, no, there were three, weren't there?
Were there? I don't remember.
I thought one had coffee, one had caramel, and one had just plain.
No, we didn't have a coffee one. I would have liked that.
I thought we did.
Did we have a white chocolate one? We were either doubly or trebly tacky
head,
in Tracy's
eyes like
anyway.
Five chocolate fountains and also a pony rides. And I came in a carriage.
It's still not as good as Beth's is going to turn out to be. She managed to get everything she wants. By good, I mean
anyway,
tacky and extravagant.
Anyway. She also is going on about crushed raspberry as a colour. It's quite superfluous having the word crushed in there. But I would suggest that perhaps crushed is a slightly either darker colour because the fruit is bruised, or perhaps lighter because it might have been aerated and maybe foamy.
Maybe. I don't know. So yeah, Rob is just trying to tell Peter to get away. Not Peter.
To
tell Carla to get away. Because obviously he worries that she's going to sort of get that.
Find out
about him, or she's going to get talking to him.
Yes. So Ken is talking to Peter about Simon. Peter comes around and he doesn't care about Simon, his first day at Weatherfield. He wants to speak to Carla. So Rob tries to stop Ken from finding Carla and telling her, but he says, no, it's up to Carla. So Rob then tells Tracy to go to the wedding fair anyway, because there's nothing she can do there.
I liked it when she was like on the way back saying, don't unplug it. I know you don't like him, but don't unplug him while I'm away, because she leaves him and Peter there in the hospital room. And he's
him
like,
and Ken.
He's probably thinking, oh, yeah, Ken. But Ken goes eventually, doesn't he? And it's like Rob is out.
Rob's there
by
himself, and it does look as though he might try to kill him.
Do you think that thought would have actually crossed his mind? Would
yes,
he have done it?
You're supposed to think that, I think.
Carl managed to get away with it, didn't he?
Yeah, well, there's only so many times you can have that. So, Ken goes to see Carla at the factory and says, look, Peter's woken up and he wants to speak to you. And she's like, no, I don't care. And he says, look, this is my son's last wish. This might be my son's last wish, so I have to tell you.
Oh, yeah. Bit of emotional blackmail.
So Carla gets on the phone straight away and starts booking a holiday anywhere warm. And
what, North Wales?
As Rob is left alone with Peter, who is still unconscious, he says to him, whatever I had to do, it was all down to you, so you might as well take the blame. Because he thinks Peter's going to die with the secret that he was the one, wasn't the one that killed Tina. As he says this, Peter starts to convulse. Oh no! And all the sirens go off. And
that was a really risky move, I thought, on Rob's part, confessing to Peter. I mean, I know what they say about can people in comas hear you or can't they or whatever, but he shouldn't have said that.
He didn't obviously look like he was going to do anything, but it did look as though he was thinking, you're going to die any minute, it doesn't really matter.
It probably was quite nice for Rob to be able to actually tell someone about it, because he's had this bottled up inside him for sort of 2 or 3 months, and he's able to actually talk to someone, or talk at someone, like a bit of a confession, maybe.
He needs to get it off his chest.
He's been feeling guilty, and he's not been able to do anything apart from look furtively for the past 2 months. So, enough to shock Peter awake anyway. So the nurse comes in.
Well, no, it's the doctor, I think.
Oh, yeah, the doctor comes in.
The doctor comes in. Meanwhile, Carla's trying to justify herself to everybody, and Michelle's saying, look, you might regret it. And Carla's like, no, I won't, and I'm going on holiday anyway. So Ken rushes off to the doctor, to the hospital, meets Rob in the waiting room and says they've just got to wait because he's had a seizure and we need to know, you know, we've got to wait to see what happens. Rob gets the text from Carla to say that she's going on holiday.
Meanwhile, Tracy comes back then from the wedding fair and Ken's like, what are you doing? You don't care about Peter. But like you said, she's got other things on her mind.
She's got lots of lovely shopping bags.
Yeah.
Really, what could she have done there? Nothing? Nothing?
What would you have done?
Shopping, buy stuff.
Are you glad you don't have a brother so you don't have to make these dilemmas about shopping or brothers?
I tell you what, it's a good way to budget, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can do internet shopping.
Okay, so we had, Carla's still sort of not interested in Peter. She wants to get a cab, fly away somewhere.
Steve tells her in the car, look, it doesn't look as though he's going to make it. And Carla's like, oh, too bad. And then she says, look, what do you think I should do then, Steve? And Steve says, I've made decisions where I ignored everybody, but sometimes you can't see the wood for the trees, which is not very helpful. But somehow Carla translates that to, I'm going to go to see Peter.
Yeah, she went to the airport, didn't she? She said, and then decided to come back to him. So we see that Peter is later stable but critical, and sends Ken and everyone home, basically.
Well, Ken's relieved, but obviously Rob looks worried now.
Yeah, because he's said that confession.
Yeah, and also Ken gives a little bit of a plug for Jim in the Rovers when he tells Liz and Steve that it was Jim who found Peter. And so he deserves a second chance. He just wants to see Steve.
Well, he didn't get one this week, but do you think then that Liz is going to kind of go creeping back, or maybe
think
Steve
of him
is?
As a hero or something.
Well, Steve never went to see him at all, did he? So maybe he's going to go there.
So Carla turns up in the street. She doesn't go straight to the hospital, but she comes back to the street and says, "I'm not going on holiday. I couldn't go." And Rob says, "He's not even awake. So what's the point of going?" And she says, I know, because I was just there. So, yeah, I was wrong. She did go there.
Yes. But she says she came back for closure.
Yeah.
I think that was probably...
She's not back for Peter, she's back for herself.
Yeah. I think that was probably the right thing to do, because if she'd have gone on holiday, she'd have just spent the whole time worrying about it and thinking about it. And...
Well, it was Rob's fault, because he told her, if you go now, he might be dead by the time you come back. Mm. As like, haha, good. But she thought, oh no, if I don't get to say goodbye... It'll be weird.
Yeah, I think she would have come across as looking a little bit too
hard-faced
and harsh if she'd gone off. Because a lot of people this week have sounded like they're concerned for Peter, aren't they? Like Audrey was asking after him today. And even though they all think he was a murderer, they don't want to see him dead.
No.
Or maybe it's only because they don't want Ken to keel over after him. I don't know.
Maybe.
So Wednesdays was back in the hospital then. Ken has told... Oh yeah, it was all to do with the wedding as well, wasn't it? Ken has told Tracy to hold fire on the wedding plans. There was that weird thing about Tracy singing her song. Because she's planning what music she wants at the wedding.
It's like, they practiced the scene and she heard the song, and then next day she had to do the scene and forgotten what the tune was supposed to be like, because it didn't sound anything like that, and you certainly wouldn't have picked those two lines out of the song to describe what it sounded like to anybody.
Well, no, but somehow Ken manages to work it out just from la, 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 la.
Like,
that's not the main bit of the
song. I think that's a Kylie song.
That's not the main bit of the song.
It goes la 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 la
la la la la la la la. Yeah, so then he would have got it. Weird. But that was quite funny. Yeah, so Ken's quite annoyed that she's still thinking about the wedding. And I think Ken was a little bit harsh there, I mean.
Well, I thought Ken was being a total dick, because he says, call the wedding off, it's not right, it's terrible. Go and tell Michelle that you're not having it anymore. And for once, I actually did feel sorry.
I really felt sorry for Tracy because on Wednesday. Yeah.
Although she's only saying, oh, I thought this family should have something nice. She's only saying that for her own convenience. And you know that she doesn't give a crap. But really, because she doesn't give a crap, then why can't they just have a wedding? All Ken has to do is turn up on one day. He doesn't have to be involved in anything else. And certainly wouldn't have been under any other circumstances. Can't he just let her get on with it?
Yeah. I'd like to have seen Deirdre in this week's episodes to see what she would have thought about that, because she was off screen completely, wasn't she? She was upstairs with a headache or something on Monday, I think, and then we didn't get to see her for the rest of the week. Last week we didn't get to see Ken. I don't think they've had a scene together in like 2 weeks, which is a bit bizarre since he's been back. But yeah, I thought Ken was totally out of order in it. I really felt sorry for Tracy, and some of the other characters commented that they'd seen her crying as well. So
yeah, that was really sad. When they said she was crying, I was like, oh, Tracy.
She is a bit of a romantic, isn't she? Because
she totally is.
She was fawning after Steve and like telling Deirdre, oh, I've always loved Steve, he's the love of my life and everything. She's got a heart in there.
She has somewhere, but what's she doing with it? I don't know.
So Ken goes to the hospital, he finds Carla again there. She's just standing over Peter. She doesn't know what to do, really, but she just kind of feels like she should be there. He's had a blood transfusion this week, so the internal bleeding is under control, and Ken's like, yeah, I appreciate you coming. I think Ken and Carla team up next week, looks like it's going to be. Because he was saying,
so?
Yeah, well, he was saying today how much he feels like... he's just saying, oh, I realise how hard it's been for Carla today. And she's obviously going to speak to him about what Peter said at the end of this Wednesday episode, which was he wakes up when she's there, and then he had that great confession where he's like, I just wanted to see you one last time, and he was all sort of like a bit soppy and sad, and Carla calls him a pathetic old fool, and then Peter says he knows that she killed Tina and he'll take her secret to the grave,
and Carla's like, huh? Well, everyone thinks Peter killed Tina up until this moment. And suddenly, on his deathbed, Peter's offering to keep Carla's secret that she killed her, Tina, you know.
Yeah, and it's which like, obviously he wouldn't be doing if he was dying, if he was lying.
When he said that, I was like, oh!
I thought that was a really exciting. Good, really good twist, actually. I like that one. I mean, I always thought that Rob would get found out somehow, but I thought he'd be the one that was tripping up, and this looks like that it's going to be more like probably Detective Ken on the case, going to piece it together.
This is going to be the catalyst, isn't it? This is why I thought, oh, Friday's going to be amazing, but no.
I mean, it's not hard evidence one way or the other, is it? But
no, but it's certainly enough.
To get people thinking. Will it get the police thinking?
As we find out at the end of this episode, when Carla goes and tells Michelle what happened, she basically says, if it wasn't you and it wasn't Peter, then who the flippin' heck killed Tina?
Yeah. Da,
da, da. Oh, I don't know.
Who done it?
Although
done
I don't it? Really don't understand why nobody is just going, I guess it must have been just a random freak.
Yeah.
Because really, it's just as likely, isn't it?
Mm. The only other things that was going on in that episode was Tracy, all the Tracy wedding stuff, because there was that scene with Steve and Michelle auditioning the harpist playing The Wind Beneath Your Wings. So not quite Prodigy's Firestarter. So even ITV couldn't find a harpist that could play that, I guess.
That's really... Unless they're saving it for the actual wedding, that would be good.
They could be. I mean, that's what they did with Karen's wedding. They didn't play the Wonderwall until the wedding itself. Yeah, and then that's when Tracy walks in and she... Because she
still thinks she's got to cancel.
Yeah, after what Ken said, but she says that the tells the woman that the 80s phoned and wants her top back, and it's true.
Dress. She did have... She's had a very dodgy dress on.
Yeah, but that's Tracy sort of being hardened. So she was obviously moved by the music, and she's upset that she thinks that she's not going to be able to have it.
Yeah, so she said it's crap.
Yeah, so she goes and has a cry in the pub, although we didn't see that. I don't know whether... I can't remember seeing Tracy cry, but it's nice to think that she has got it in her to do it.
Yeah. The physical capabilities.
Well, she actually says, there's not many people I give a stuff about, but Peter's one of them. And yeah, that's high praise
sweet,
indeed.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, so she decides, thanks to a bit of convincing from Michelle, that she should go ahead with this wedding. They didn't tell Ken in the end, did they? That they cancelled. Oh, that's when the Wrath of Ken line came, because Rob says, look, if you're happy to face the Wrath of Ken, which you got straight away, being a Star Trek fan. Kind of. I didn't get it. But I did go off on Photoshop and
it's a really famous
make a
thing,
little picture.
The Wrath of Khan.
No, I have heard it. I've heard of it, but I didn't get it that was a reference. Yes, I made a little Photoshop of that, and I hoped it would go viral on Twitter, but it was
and
only
it
got
didn't.
About retweeted by about one
but
person.
But you know
sad.
What? If you're listening and you have a Twitter account,
go and find us just, and just retweet our
just
little
picture. Just retweet
pictures,
everything
please.
We say.
Very funny.
So that we can get more.
It was on Facebook. We had some people liking it on Facebook, and people laughed at it.
Because, like, really, I'm only in this for the money, and so far we haven't made anything.
And the
in fact, we've actually spent
and the adoring fans.
Oh yeah, yeah. Forgot about that. But mostly, I'm in it for the money.
So Friday's episode. Yeah, not much happened because yeah, all this cricket and Tyrone stuff got in the way. But basically, the doctor has given Peter a warning that even though he's over the worst of his problem, if he drinks again, he's at risk of dying. So that's quite a like, what's going to happen? Because if Peter, I can't believe even after this.
He's going to stop drinking.
No, because, I mean, they went through that thing where he set his flat on fire and nearly killed Simon, like,
yeah.
Whenever it was 5 years ago, and he's right back to the bottle again. So I honestly don't think that this is enough to stop him. He says that he's got the message, but I don't know.
Well, the way everyone's smiling and talking about it, that it's like as if he has been cured of being an alcoholic now, just because if he has another drink, he's going to die. Because they all seem to be like, yes, no problem, doctor, that won't happen, but he's still addicted to alcohol. He's not You can't just go, well, the dire consequences of this, that's not how addiction works.
No, I think, because Rob finds out about this later, doesn't he, and I wonder whether he's going to try and, like, when I can't really persuade Peter actually
no,
to drink, can
he?
Because he's not
no,
how's he going to, because
just leave drink around and drink in front of him and talk about drinking.
Where? In the hospital? Because
anywhere.
He's not going to go to the prison to do it.
Yeah, I guess so.
So I don't know. Maybe you'll like hook some up to his drip in the hospital.
Yeah, but you see, is he going to get out based off of this, off of what he's just said to Carla? Are the gears going to work quickly enough for
it
them to cast an... Is Ken going to investigate and find some evidence that proves that Peter couldn't have done it, rather than finding evidence that somebody else could have done it? So maybe he will get let off because they found new evidence.
On bail.
Yeah. And then it doesn't implicate Rob, so Rob's still free to meddle with Peter. That would be the most interesting thing. If there's some fact that we've overlooked and they've overlooked that proves that it wasn't him.
Yeah, and we'd still get to see Jim if that happened as well, because it looks like Steve and Liz are going to be sneaking back.
Thawing,
aren't they? Yeah, so Rob finds out about this, and Carla is trying to then confides in Rob what Peter said, which is obviously bad news for Rob, because he's obviously... Peter's could be well in the clear, so Carla wants to tell Ken about it, but he's like, no, don't look out. And they agree that Ken is looking very happy talking to Audrey about travelling through Europe or whatever, so she decides to sleep on it. And then there's that funny scene at the end, well, bizarre scene where Ken goes home and shares a drink with Rob, like they're
old pals.
Because this is when Ken has realised that Carla's going through quite an ordeal at the moment. So.
Yeah.
So Ken and Carla are obviously got to get their heads together over this next week. Carla's gonna feel that she has to confess to him, so yeah, I think you're right. I think he's probably gonna be let off, so it could be very interesting.
Maybe, I don't know,
maybe it's not too long before it all unravels for Rob.
It's all kicking off.
So what was the next storyline we're talking about? It's Tycoon Todd next.
Yay.
I enjoyed this storyline more this week. I don't really like what Fizz has kind of become this week. I mean, a lot of people would say that she's, a lot of people would say that she's been like it all along, but she really has been like pushing for more money and more, and she seems greedy, even though it's not greed. They do
I
need the money.
I wouldn't have said that was greedy at all.
Yeah, well, she does need the money, doesn't she?
Yeah.
She seems like she's the one that's kind of pulling the strings a bit, and she's almost like bullying Tyrone into doing something about it.
Yeah, but to me, it was completely the opposite way around. I was thinking, Fizz, you need to stand up for what you know is right, and Tyrone, why are you being such a spineless moron?
Because
he's putting friendship in front of his family.
Yeah, I guess they do have Hope and Ruby to think
Jason's doing his best, but £2,000 is enough. What, to feed a family for 8 weeks? I don't think so.
I don't know. You do the shopping.
What the hell? No, I'm not just talking about that. I'm talking about all the other bills that they have.
No. He does need the money.
£20,000 in a month.
Anyway, so Fizz and Tyrone go to the garage on Monday, and Luke says that they're having to turn customers away at the moment because he's so backed up. So yeah, Fizz is saying, look, Tony needs to make a more realistic offer. At this point, he'd have offered £1,000, hadn't he, on Friday's episode. So I liked Tony kind of being the boss of Todd a little bit more this week, because he was like getting him to do all the dog's body work on the tidying up and everything. That's quite good. Making cups of tea and everything. It was actually quite threatening towards Todd.
Yeah.
So Fizz goes to the house later, and she's a little sheepish about asking about compensation, although she comes a bit more confident in this demand later in the week. She says, a grand's not enough to pay the bills. Tony says he'll see what he can do. But in the second half, he's like, no, I can't afford it. Can't afford to offer you any more.
Nope, exactly.
He offers to buy Fizz a drink, though, but...
Yeah, well, she gets a bit upset, and Tony says, Tony and Jason have a chat, and Jason says, look, you need to give them more. And Tony says, don't worry about it, they're not going to find anything out, they just need to, they'll do what we tell them, basically. But he does go and offer Fizz £2,000, and she says she'll talk about it to Tyrone.
Mm-hmm. So, Wednesday, we didn't see much of the storyline. We had the talk about them sleeping in the lounge.
Well, Fizz has done her stunt, so she realises that £2,000 still isn't enough, because they've got so many things that they need to buy. Meanwhile, Tyrone catches Jason throwing the old flooring in the skip, and he's like, why can't you just use it again? There's nothing wrong with it. And he's like, oh, no, we need all the new stuff. Can't use this again.
He was like,
oh, I'd rather do
trying to make it out like, stuff. Oh, I'm doing you a favour as well by getting you new stuff.
Yeah, I'm just so conscientious. I couldn't possibly. And Tyrone's like, oh, you've been working so hard, you should take the day off. Poor guy.
Yeah.
So on Friday, we see a bit more impact on Tyrone's business when Steve tells him that he needs his cars MOTing, and Tyrone can't do it for a few weeks. So Steve says, well, they're going to have to go somewhere else. And Tyrone's like, oh, how could you do this to me? You're supposed to be my friend. And Steve's like, oh, it's not my fault, it's Lloyd.
If I was Steve, I don't think I'd want to take my cars to Tyrone's, because I'd think that Luke and Katie might be getting up to something in the back of it. Anyway, Tyrone is telling Tony and Jason about losing business, and he's looked like, I need £3,000 now. So Tony's first move is to go and ask Steve to reconsider.
He says, yeah, can you please get your cars done by Tyrone, because I'm having to pay him money now because of you.
Hmm.
We never find out what Steve says, but I assume it's basically, I need to get my cars MOT'd. Why on earth would you have all your cars in your fleet of taxis needing MOTs at exactly the same time?
That's true.
It seems like a bit of a weird way of setting things up.
So Fizz has been watching TV.
Apparently, I didn't know there was actually television.
Yeah, she's discovered a solicitors that
she's discovered
no win, no fee.
Yeah,
there are people on the TV on these dodgy channels
An accident in the last 3 years that wasn't your fault. Fizz is like, yes.
What a coincidence!
I didn't know there was such a thing. So they chat about it, and so Tyrone goes off and tells Jason about it.
We said we didn't understand this, did we? Because Jason's quite like, oh yeah, well,
I'll think about it. So yeah, Tyrone seems to go up to him and say, oh, we're going to go through these no win, no fee people because we can't take £3,000. We need more than that. And Jason's like, oh, well, I don't have any more money to give you.
Yeah.
So wouldn't you be like, holy heck, please do not sue me or take me to court over this. I'll do anything.
Yeah, but he wasn't like that. I don't understand how these things work, but Jason's reaction
really casual
didn't...
about it. Maybe he's too stupid to know what a solicitor is. So, Jason goes and speaks to Tony and says, I want to confess about this. I need to tell Taryn what really happened. And Tony's like, don't worry, they're not going to get compensation. It's all patched up. What are they going to get compensation for? It's too late for that now. And Jason says, look, it would make me feel really really good if you gave them the $3,000 that they wanted. Yeah. And I'll pay you back later. So meanwhile, Fizz is telling Tyrone that they could get $5,000 minimum from these solicitors. And Tyrone's like, oh, but what would happen if Jason fell out with us? What would happen if they think that nothing happened and they lie about it? So on the one hand, he's saying, oh, yeah, but I don't want to lose my friend. And on the other hand, he's saying, but what if my friend screws me over?
So that's when Tony comes around, doesn't he? And he is offering them £3,000. And he's like saying, no, don't go through these solicitors because you could end up losing more money than...
Well, you'll get nothing if you go. You could end up losing out.
Yeah. So Tyrone goes around and he accepts and he gets this check later. And then the cliffhanger at the end of that episode is, which I thought was quite good as well.
I thought this was really good.
I think it's good cliffhangers this week. Yeah. Owen's digging around through the skip and he's discovered some... the floorboards.
He's just got some flimsy little chipboards that you wouldn't even use for a shelf.
Yeah. And so Tyrone's like, what? Shelves?
No, Tyrone's like, are you going to use those for the floor? And Owen's like, no, they're too flimsy and they don't meet regulations. Why? This isn't what they use for your floor, is it? And they're like, I think we've been lied to.
Yeah.
All along.
Yeah.
So, Fizz and Tyrone... in the next episode storm round there looking for answers.
I don't like it when Fizz and Tyrone get angry because they're like, they're supposed to be the nice, friendly, cuddly, exactly, happy couple, and Tyrone's just never intimidating.
Tyrone always looks like he's having a temper tantrum, like he's a little toddler and he wants some banana puree.
I mean, when he stood up to Todd sort of in the past, when it was a whole Maria thing, it was quite good. But yeah, Tyrone is just like, he's not that scary. Sad to say.
So Tony kind of handles it quite well because he's like, oh, you just hinted to this information. You're going to have to investigate this. But Jason's looking really guilty. So they walk off and Tony's like, well, this is all Todd's fault. How's he going to get out of this?
Yeah, and he ends up confiding in Liz as well, which was maybe not the best move to do in the pub.
Well, no, he basically says it's Todd's fault. But Jason's blaming Tony because Tony made it worse by making them lie. So Tyrone and Fizz decide to sue and they start to fish the flooring out of the skip as evidence.
Yeah. And then meanwhile in the Rovers, we had that scene where Owen comes in and talks to Jason. I mean, obviously his history with Jason goes back a long way and he's like, didn't I teach you anything? You must have known
what was going on.
So Jason tells him everything that happened.
He says, look, it's nothing to do with me. I only found out when it's too late.
And Gary as well. He says that Gary... Well, kind of. I mean, he says that Gary was innocent, but he did know that he was doing it, but Todd had threatened to sack him.
Yeah.
So I thought that, because we thought at the time, when Tyrone and Fizz were saying, oh, we're going to get the flooring out of the skip, that Owen would have taken it all by then. And then I thought that Owen would keep it, because he would know that if Tyrone and whatever sued Jason, that would mean that Gary would have to take the blame for it. But
no, they didn't. No. They decided not to go down that route, didn't they?
Yeah.
So, when Jason says, finally, I need to confess to this. I need to tell them exactly what happens. It goes to find them as they're taking this wood out of the skip and says, look, I didn't know anything about it. Blah, blah. This is what happened. And Tyrone says, nope, I know I'm not interested. I thought you were my friend. Your business is over. I'm going to sue you.
They're nasty Tyrone at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, if I was in his position, I'd probably want to do the same thing.
I don't know what I'd say. It'd probably be like, oh, okay, it makes more sense now why you didn't want me to go to the cops, but now I'm afraid I want $5,000. That's probably what I would say. I'd say, you know, both of us know there's a chance that it won't go through, but on the other hand, I could get a lot more than £5,000.
Yeah.
You know that you did it wrong. You know that you're at fault, so you just give me what I'm owed.
So what do you think?
Because at the
happen?
End of the day, if they go through court, all that money's going to get sucked up by lawyers and solicitors and stuff. All the time's going to be wasted. Just need to say, look, you know that I'm going to win this. Give me the money.
It'd be sad to think that Jason's business did kind of have to close because of this. I don't think it will, because there's always got to be some build in Coronation Street. And I really like the idea that it's run by, like, honest Jason rather than one of these kind of...
I wonder whether Owen's going to use this as an opportunity to try to regain control of that yard.
Maybe.
He could get Gary to stitch them right up.
I hope not, though. I much prefer Jason in charge of the builders than Owen. Or do you?
No, because all he does is hang around with Todd and Tony.
Yeah, but that's kind
but
of...
But what has he actually done?
Well, I don't know.
No,
he,
you don't.
Todd's found him some work today, hasn't he? Because there's that whole... He was talking about this property developer who's...
Yeah, but he's not going to be able to take that up now, is he?
No, but so maybe... Maybe Owen... Yeah, maybe Owen will jump
maybe
in.
Maybe Owen will be like... I don't know. Mm. I can't think of a way around it, but I'm sure they could think of something.
Mm. No, I would rather Jason kept the business. Anyway, Mad Max, let's move on to. So we had his, he's been seeing doctors and that this week, hasn't he? Because Monday's episode was Max's appointment with the, he was a psychiatrist or something.
I'm reading a book at the moment that is set in the 1800s in America, and they used to call psychiatrists alienists.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So they get visited by an alienist. Kylie's obviously very worried about the state of the house, and of course the person that comes around is very nice and she just wants to see...
Hello, I'm professional in Coronation Street, which means I talk posh and I have no personality.
Yeah, exactly. Very bland. And she says, like, I'm not here to judge your house or your parenting, just to see how Max is. So Michael and Gail take Lily away, and I do still feel sorry for Michael because Kylie was kind of vile to him earlier, wasn't she?
She said, don't look so criminal.
Yeah. So they just do this card game, don't they, Max and David, and Max can't play properly. He keeps cheating at a snap.
But to be fair, that's how I play it.
So that was about it. Nothing happened particularly, did
no,
there? There was no
says,
big outburst.
I'm not going to tell you what I'm thinking, I'm not going to tell you anything now. I've got to see him at school.
Yeah, I feel so sorry for Max's teacher because Wednesday was the first day back at school, and first day back after the summer holidays, you do not want some educational authority coming in to watch you on your first day.
I don't imagine that would have happened.
No, I wouldn't have let them. Because she also said, oh yeah, the school's all informed, they know exactly what's going on. How easy is it to contact the school during the holidays?
No,
not particularly, I know.
Also, you wouldn't be able to observe him properly on the first day back because he'd be too hyper and excited and so would all the other kids.
Yeah, it's
so
not the normal situation.
You just have to pretend that in Coronation Street Land they didn't have a summer holidays because as you recall from previous weeks, they've forgotten
but
that
they said it was his first day back. And the other thing, sorry to just to point out all these plot inconsistencies, they're back at school on Wednesday's episode and we get to see David and Kylie because Kylie's distracted and then they get a phone call summoned into the school. And the school either didn't take down their displays at the end of the summer term or in the first 2 hours of being back at school, the whole corridors are all fully filled up with bits of painting and stuff.
You know how indignant you are about this?
Yes.
This is how I felt when I watched The Devil Wears Prada. That's not how you do a magazine. Anyway, so he squirted paint all over the place because he's such a little devil and he's been suspended for the afternoon. So when they come back, Kylie's all frazzled about it. And then David makes it even worse by reminding her that it is Max's birthday tomorrow and she's forgotten about it and she can't believe it.
I don't know why she would have forgotten because she always, she said a couple of weeks ago, all these birthdays together, didn't she? Mine and Lily's and then Max's. So
I don't understand how
them.
Anybody forgets anything to do with special events because I look forward to everything. Anything that's possible that you can celebrate in any way, I look forward to it. I even had a special shoes on for St. Patrick's Day and I have got nothing to do with Ireland at all.
So
anyway,
you don't.
No, I don't. So on Friday, Max's appointment is at 1. So Gail
appointment
thinks,
for birthday.
Gail thinks video games is to blame and David thinks that he should play on Minecraft or something. I don't know why.
I can't remember.
They come back, you don't get to see the appointment, do you? You just see them coming back and they say, he's on pills, they don't mention which pills, but I think we all know. And it's hereditary, there's nothing they could have done, he was born with it.
Yeah.
He was born Mad Max.
Yeah, then they have this mention of his dad again, about how what a nice piece of work he was as well,
yeah.
And got it off of him.
So Kylie's worried about this all the way through because she says he's going to be on pills till he's 18 or 19. Maybe we shouldn't be medicating him. Maybe this is the easy way out.
I quite liked the reason they gave for David not thinking it so bad because he brought up that he's apparently on this regular medicine for his epilepsy as well. Not that we ever see it, but I thought that was a nice reason because all the way through David's been like, it's not so bad, they'll be able to sort it. But the fact that he's on pills.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a brain problem too, hasn't he?
Exactly.
So, he gets given his first pill, which should work in an hour. Oh my goodness. Is it going to work? I don't know.
Yes, it does.
It does work.
It does
because
work.
Max goes to bed when he's told. Kylie is still not really happy about him being dosed up, but everyone is just relieved that he's gone to sleep.
Mm. And I have to say, I was very relieved in that last scene as well, because we get to find out that Michael's tag is coming off in a couple of days.
You.
At last, it's no longer going to be the excuse at the end of the end of every episode why he leaves.
Yeah, exactly. And that leads us neatly into the fact that he said, oh good, because there's cricket tomorrow.
Yes, he'll be able to go and watch the cricket.
Thank God, let's talk about cricket.
Oh, it was just utterly dull, I thought. On Monday, we see Steve trying to recruit a couple of people. Apparently, he goes off to see Chesney. Luke, he tries to recruit, but he turns him down. And then Steph, who was the captain of the school rounders team or something, they try and ask her as well. Didn't hear about it on Wednesday, thank goodness. But Friday, we had some very peculiar scenes. So this team were assembling in the Rovers. I thought that was kind of funny because it's such a ragtag bunch, wasn't it? Like of amateur
wearing
cricketers.
Different things, and some people wearing totally kitted out to the nines in all their cricket gear, and some people just wearing like whatever they could find. Yeah. Chesney was wearing his mum's white trousers, which were far too big for him. Dev was funny. With a pair of sunglasses, and it's like.
That was the best entrance. That was the best bit about the cricket. Yeah. Dev walking in and like going, hey, cricket.
Yeah. So they all go to Chimney Pot Park and have practice.
Yeah, it was Chimney Pot Park.
Yeah. Well, they call it Weatherfield Recreational Ground is what the new name for it is now.
Was it? I don't remember.
Well, it starts off as a bit of a shambles. They're kind of talking to each other and not really paying attention. Dev's like, oh, should I be standing here? I don't know.
It was just like, they were trying desperately in that first scene on the Red Rec to have like funny banter between the characters.
It was a bit stiff.
It was really stiff. It wasn't working.
There are too many new characters in that group to really be. You've got Sharif, Cal, Steph. They're all new characters.
Yeah, I mean, Steve was there, but he wasn't enough. He was just kind of standing around in his hat.
Because I don't know why, he wasn't really in it enough. But yeah, the banter didn't really work, which is a bit of a worry, considering that this is like moving into being some kind of major storyline. I just don't know where they're going with it. But it seemed like the main reason they wanted to have this scene was so that they could introduce a new old character who we've been hearing about for weeks and weeks and weeks. Sharif hits the ball, Cal catches it, and as they're arguing about whether that really counts as a go or whether Sharif is out or not, Zidane comes up.
Yeah, and we get to hear him call Sharif Babaji, just like Alia does. We actually went on the internet to look that up afterwards, didn't we?
It was a bit confusing.
Bit of investigative journalism, we discovered that G is a little suffix that you can put onto the end of names to show respect. So it's a bit like San in Japanese.
So really, you should call me Gemma G.
Yeah. No, you're my Baba G.
No, I'm not. Doesn't that mean old man?
No, you're my baby. Called Gemma. Baba G.
No, but Baba means means wise man, doesn't it?
Baba means father, but it can also mean grandfather, apparently.
Yeah, don't call me Baba G then, thanks very much.
We didn't say about the argument between Steph and, not Steph, Dev and Sharif that happened as well, because they were talking about Hindus versus Muslims.
It was India versus Pakistan, okay?
Okay. They just were reeling off all these names and me and you were like, what are they talking about? Are these famous people?
These must be cricket people. They must be.
No idea. Yeah. So
I'm taking this from the context.
Zidane is there. He's not come for Cal because he's obviously fallen out with him after this whole Liam business. He came for Sharif.
They all go back, don't they?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't think of particularly very much of Zidane this episode. He didn't have much to say for himself. I think he's probably going to just be another kind of hunky guy.
I didn't like him. He spent too much time pouting and squinting.
Yeah, he's not particularly got much of a personality at the moment, I'm sad to say. I was looking forward to the latest member of the...
So far, all we know about him are two things that don't particularly endear us to him. Number one, he doesn't like Cal. I don't care. Number two, he likes cricket. I don't care.
No. He likes Twitter. He likes fans. I always imagined him being a little bit younger. He was older than I imagined. Because when Yasmin was talking about shutting himself in his room on his phone.
Yeah. Maybe he's one of these kids that looks like 45 and they're actually 15.
Yeah. Or an adult that hasn't grown up.
So, anyway, as we mentioned before, everyone's arguing.
At the gym.
At the gym.
Because we can't decide who's going to be team captain. Because it's like Dev and Sharif both want to be captain. And they won't stand down.
They don't like each other. And they say, and eventually Alia says, look, you won't take advice of each other. So you should let somebody else be a captain. So you two can just play. Because you're the most skilled players. Which was a nice bit of psychology that she used on them there. And eventually they all suggest that Alia does it. Dev thinks the idea of a female captain is hilarious because he still lives in the 1950s. Because if you're going to let girls play, there's no reason why they can't be the captain.
I'm trying to decide whether I think that that's true to Dev's character or not, and I think it probably is because he is quite old-fashioned in a lot of his ways, isn't he? I'm worried that this storyline is going to turn into some kind of sexism thing, and it's
they handled the racism storyline so badly last year. I don't really want to watch like 5 scenes of cricket to prove that girls are as good as boys at things because they're not as good at some sports as boys are. That's just a fact.
But so what's whether they're not good, whether they're good as boys at cricket, I don't know because I never watch cricket because it's boring.
No.
But yeah, and that's how we leave Dev. So Dev has not been shown in a very good light in today's episode at all, which is a shame because he's usually the funny one, the one out of that bunch of cricketers I actually like as a character.
I mean, the other thing is, I think it's not necessarily to do with. I don't know. If I was, I don't know how old is Dev? Like, he's 50 now, isn't he?
Yeah, he's 50.
If I was a 50-year-old man, I don't know that I would particularly feel that a 19-year-old or however old he is girl knew anything more than me about any subject apart from how to use Facebook.
True.
So I think he's perfectly justified in sort of going, what? Why would she be in charge?
Yeah, I mean, if he'd have said it was to do with her age rather than her gender, maybe you could have understood a little bit. He just came off as being a bit...
Because I kind of thought it was strange in the beginning that they even had girls on the team without even so much as a comment of saying, oh, girls playing cricket.
Well, yeah, Steve was pretty desperate just to get anyone who would look interested.
And when they had the football before, they didn't have girls on the team.
No, I don't think so.
So why is it suddenly... Now they've got girls on the team. I don't get it.
We live in modern times. The world has changed since 2012.
Do you know what it is?
What?
It's like cricket is like Quidditch.
They let anyone in.
Girls can play it too.
Yeah. Who was the Quidditch captain? Did Harry Potter get it? It was Oliver Wood at the beginning,
wasn't
it?
Oliver Wood, yeah, and then he died.
I don't know.
Didn't he? I can't remember.
Oliver Wood didn't die. No, he left school.
Same thing.
That's why I was to the teacher.
Harrison.
No, Katie Bell was on the Quidditch team, weren't they? She was a character. Angelina Johnson.
Angelina Jolie. Yeah. She was the captain.
Anyway, this isn't a Harry Potter podcast.
This isn't even about Quidditch.
About that, I think.
So there you go, listeners. This is why we don't really get the cricket, because to us it makes about as much sense as a fictional game made up about wizards.
I understand Quidditch more than I understand cricket, honestly, I really do.
Yeah, well, let's face it, you've seen more Quidditch matches than you've seen cricket.
That's true, that is true.
What a sad indictment on modern life.
Talking about boring young characters that had very little to Coronation Street at the moment, Lucchetti's storyline on Monday at least. And actually, it was kind of funny. A little bit, because all it was them trying to convince Steph that they were still a couple for a laugh, because Steph was stropping around, wasn't she? She can't stomach the fact that her brother is going out with her best friend. So they play a little trick on her. They're all together in the flat,
they've already
usual.
Agreed that they don't want to be together, but she doesn't know. So she keeps trying to tell them they shouldn't be together, and without realising that they aren't together anymore. So Katie says, look, maybe we should have a bit of a laugh about this to her.
Yeah, and so yeah, they're all over each other saying, oh, we're going to have a romantic bath, we're going to light the candles and everything, they're canoodling on the sofa.
To be honest, I wouldn't like this with any two people, even if they were my
brother
and
not.
My friend. I just think there's a time and a place to get like that about each other, and it's not when I'm sitting on the same sofa as you. And if you want to do that, I will get a spray bottle and I'll spray you like a cat.
But then they admit they're just having a laugh, and she was I knew all along, and that was the end of that story.
That was it. Well, you summed that up quite nicely. I don't know why they didn't just have that.
I don't understand what that storyline was about, because we've seen Luke and Katie kind of getting closer for months on and off, and then they finally decide to get together, and it lasts about 2 episodes. So weird.
Well, they can't all be multi, month long You gotta have some short ones.
I just honestly don't. It was kind of funny. I just honestly don't think they know what to do with Luke or Katie at the moment.
I think they just think we need more young viewers. We need more young characters. We need more scenes with just these characters in them because they're not convincing enough as they are, and they can't just be hanging around Rita all the time. They need to be
doing young interesting people stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And you can't really care about characters unless you've known them for a long time.
It's true.
And Steph is really a good character. She's way better than Katie. Katie's been in it for long enough now to prove that she's got nothing to offer at all. She's boring.
I guess this is like the first time in a very long time that this has been like a storyline about young people being young people,
yeah, exactly.
Isn't it?
So that's why they did it. And I imagine they started off with a short scene like this, a short storyline like this, just to see did it go down all right with people.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to turn into Hollyoaks, I guess.
No, it won't do, but it is good to have the youngins on, isn't it?
Yeah.
It wasn't too bad of a storyline.
I'm just glad that it was over quickly. The stuff in the camper van was quite funny last week as well.
Yeah, I think Steph's carrying Luke and Katie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If Steph wasn't in it, it would...
Just imagine, all those months ago, we were like, oh, Slaggy Steph, I hate her, she's boring and crap. Now she's one of our favourite...
Turn around.
Well, not our favourite characters, but she's certainly...
I won't get that far, but
one of the best newcomers recently.
Definitely. Still like Sinead better, but she's not in it as much. Steph has taken over from Sinead as, like, the new young main character,
exactly,
isn't she?
Yeah.
Get more Sinead. So, we might see some more Sinead in this next storyline, though, mightn't we? The Wedding Kirk storyline. Beth and Kirk have decided to look through some wedding magazines, and then Fizz suggests that they get Michelle to organise the wedding. This is a proper business that Michelle's setting up now, it seems. It's like that's all she does now, and it's...
She'll have at least two couples a year, I think.
I don't like the idea that every single wedding that happens in Coronation Street is going
to
go through Michelle. I mean, all the different ones. It hopefully won't do, because, I mean, you want them to be all unique, don't
Look,
you?
The reason why this is happening is because Beth wants a better wedding than Tracy and Rob.
Yes.
She doesn't want her own wedding. She wants a wedding that's better than Tracy and Rob's, and I don't doubt that before she gets anywhere near walking down that aisle, she's going to realise this is what she's doing, and she's going to go stay true to herself and change all of her plans and do something a lot more personal and more Tinker-like.
What do you mean she's going to realise? I mean, all the way through the episode she was saying how many palpers has Tracy got? I want one more or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, she knows full well what she's doing. I don't think
she doesn't realise that she only wants it because that's what Tracy wants. She thinks that she genuinely wants to beat Tracy at a wedding, but actually what she really wants is a nice wedding.
Yeah.
Then she'll realise she's being stupid.
It's not like...
Because otherwise it'll be boring. You don't want to watch two weddings, which are basically the same, but with one more harpist.
Mm. We do know that Beth is very insecure as a person, though,
don't
we? So she thinks that this is going to be...
She's kind of insecure, but she also, I think she knows herself better than this, and she'll snap out of it, especially when she realises what's going to happen is...
Kirk says he's going to get the money, so he's not going to work himself to death.
He's not
going
to be able to do it.
And then
she'll say, oh, Kirky, I don't care, I just want to marry you.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll run off to Vegas or something.
Yeah, so it's just like the boob job story.
So they go in to talk to Michelle about it on Monday, and she kind of acts a bit like, well, I don't think you can afford me. You know that wedding planners cost money and stuff. So Beth's like, oh, you don't know what I can afford. You will talk about it and have a proper meeting. So they go back on Friday to their appointment that Michelle's forgotten about. And they show her these clippings and she's like, she's a right cow, actually.
Yeah.
So when they go in...
What's Michelle? A right cow? Who'd have thought? They can dye her hair brown and make it long and tan her up, but she's still cow at heart.
Exactly. So... Beth's outlining what she wants, which is basically everything Tracy's got but better. And Michelle's like, you do know that this is going to cost quite a lot of money. And she's like, don't talk to me about money. You wait to the end and then you tell me. So they're going through everything. Michelle's tapping away into the calculator and then shows them what it says. And Beth is like, And Kirk says, don't worry, my love. If this is what you truly want, then I will find the money.
Oh, good old Kirk.
So sweet. So I can only imagine that the price that was on there was still less.
I wish
than...
they'd shown. They never show prices for anything.
I don't understand why not, because there's no reason why not to.
Mm.
There's absolutely no reason why not to. The average wedding in the UK, I think, probably cost about $25,000.
That's it? I thought it was less than that. Well, if it was when we were married, but...
Yeah, it's probably more now.
So
I don't know.
Ago.
But that includes Honeymoon and designer, everything. So I don't know what is that. The average budget doesn't really mean average, does it? That just means everybody's divided up.
Yeah.
But you want to find out what median. The one that most people spend, right? Well,
that's the mode.
The mode, okay. Teacher. The mode. You want to find out what the most average, what the average person actually spends.
Yeah.
Which I would imagine is probably under £10,000.
Yeah, probably. And I think if Beth is being honest with herself, that's about as much as they can afford. And I don't know if how they could actually even afford that. They don't seem to have any savings or anything. And did they spend all their money on the holiday, she got?
Yeah.
So, oops. I don't know. But yeah.
So they've already blown it. They can't even use that for a honeymoon.
Yeah. But anyway, good storyline. I'm looking forward to seeing that. So going to keep going for another month or so, I guess.
Until they get married,
yeah. So that was it for Coronation Street this week. I wasn't that impressed with it this week.
It wasn't as good as last week.
No, but it did have a couple of good cliffhangers, didn't it?
That did.
Carla cliffhanger on Wednesday was good.
He's
nice to have a good cliffhanger.
Oh my God.
It's nice to know that it's nice when something happens that you weren't quite expecting or you didn't know it was going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's go on to character profile now. This week for our character profile, we're going to be looking at one of the old builders of the street. We've been seeing how the young guns have been doing at the moment with Jason and his building business, but we're going to go right back and look at Len Fairclough, character that I didn't know anything about particularly before this started. I mean...
Could have asked me.
You don't know anything. I know even more than you.
Even more than me?
I know even more than you. He was... I mean, I watched him a bit on the classic episodes, and you see him on the clip shows and everything, but he's the kind of person that previously I'd not been particularly interested in, because he's just like one of these kind of man's man, blokey characters, and that was it. But I mean, we get to find out a bit more interesting thing about him during the character profile. But if anyone, listeners, have got anything to say about Len, want to sort of sell him to us, let us know. Let us know what you think. But here we go, Len Fairclough. He was born on the 5th of November, 1924, and he died on the 7th of December 1983. His parents were Ned and Grace Fairclough, and he married twice, once Nellie Briggs in 1949, and then he married Rita in 1977.
He had one child, Stanley Fairclough, mm-hmm. in 1950. He first appeared 25th of January in 1961, which is episode 14, and he last appeared on the 11th of May 1983. And he appeared 1,769 times, which makes him the 19th most featured character. And he was played by Peter Adamson.
Yeah, so Peter had worked in the theatre and TV before before auditioning for Coronation Street, and at first he tried out for the roles of Dennis Tanner and Ken Barlow, and I can't kind of imagine him in those roles at all, but neither could the producers, because at the time Adamson was 30, which was considered too old.
Past it.
Yeah, because Ken was like in late teens, I think, when early 20s maybe, when he was first in it. So he was given...
He had a chance, wasn't he?
Yeah. Instead of those parts, he was given the role of the insurance man, Harry Bailey, but that part was sadly later dropped. There was going to be an insurance man in the first episode, but they didn't need him anymore. Although the character of Harry Bailey did come back many years later.
Interesting.
But not played by Peter Adamson, of course. So he tried again for a part in Corrie. He really wanted to be on Corrie.
He knew he was onto a good thing.
Yeah. When Coronation Street extended past its initial run of 12 episodes, I think, the character of Len Fairclough was introduced, and he was just supposed to be like a drinking buddy of Harry Hewitt. So Len auditioned for that part, and he got it. So Len was at first just like kind of a side character, he didn't have much about him, but then when the character of Harry was axed, Len became like the main alpha male of the show. Like I said before, a real bloke, kind of a man's man, bit of a temper, and he was actually the first character to swear in Coronation Street. Oh yes, he said bloody in episode 170.
My goodness.
To make it worse, I think I might have read this right, I might be remembering this right, he might have said it to Emily Bishop.
Shut up, Emily, you bloody cow.
Emily at the time. Emily's not a bloody cow, take that back. He was also a bit of a womaniser and attracted to headstrong women, although he still believed that their place was at the home. I don't think he would have played on a cricket team with a 19-year-old girl on. No, but that was kind of what he was like kind of in his personal life, I guess. But in the building trade, he had a reputation of a friendly and trustworthy worker. So there's, like many of the older characters, there's been a big backstory written for Len. He was born in Liverpool in 1924, but grew up in Weatherfield during the Depression. In 1938, he left school to become an apprentice bricklayer, but left that to join the Navy during World War II, where he served with the Russian convoys protecting ships.
Cargo ships.
Yes. In 1946, he came back to Weatherfield, and then back to the building trade. In 1949, he married Nellie Briggs after having fought with his mate Harry Hewitt over her. And then baby came along, baby Stanley, in 1950. But Len was as bad a father as he was a husband. He left his wife at home to cook, clean, and look after the baby most nights while he just went and slipped pints in the Rovers.
Dreadful man.
Yeah, so that was the backstory for him. We then joined him in Coronation Street. Like I said, he came in 1961. But the main... a story I think that happened with Len was in 1962 when Nellie got fed up of him and left him. She discovered that he'd been doing private building jobs, including building a fireplace for Elsie Tanner. Now, there was always a bit of a thing between Elsie and Len, and they were always good friends, but the Coronation Street writers, I think, didn't want it to like get into a romance, even though it was nearly there on a couple of occasions. So Nellie thought that there was something going on, so she left. She briefly returned to him, but she was humiliated when he was charged for assault after hitting a guy who was on a date with Elsie. So then she went for good, leaving Stanley with her. And all this happened without the character of Nellie ever appearing on screen, which was a bit bizarre.
How strange. So in 1963, Len was employed, now self-employed, at his own builder's yard on Worsley Street. And so he goes through the divorce proceedings and he starts dating Elsie, though she turns down his proposal as she values their friendship too much.
Yeah, I think lots of fans at the time, or some fans at the time, wanted for them to be a couple, but this was maybe a way of saying, no, they're just friends, just good friends.
Now, unfortunately, a similar thing happened to Len as is happening to Jason right now. He was forced to sack his apprentices, Jerry Booth and Eddie Thomas, after he had to pay £50 when Minnie Caldwell injured herself on a staircase that he had built.
Ooh, I wonder whether they'd used poor quality wood on the mini staircase.
In 1964, Nellie dies and Len proposes to Elsie again, and then she agrees to a trial marriage, which is where they get the trial period for jobs from.
Do you think that was Coronation Street initial trial, very first trial period?
Yeah, probably.
Oh, they don't have trial periods enough on Coronation Street anymore. It used to be every couple of months somebody would be on a trial period or something.
I think we took them a bit too much. But unfortunately, she wasn't a good enough wife because she refused to cook for him or sleep with him, so he backed off.
Well, that's what else a wife's good for.
Don't know. So she spent all his money.
In 1965, he gave Jerry Booth his job back and he became a partner of the building firm. 1966, he proved he was not just good at building, he was good at counselling as well. He became... councillor. He stood against Annie Walker in the council by-elections and then promised to fence off the canal, which was one of the things that made so many people vote for him.
Well, it's a good idea because dangerous. People keep falling in and dying, don't they?
Yes. But then when he was voted through, he went on to oppose the move to fence off, so that didn't make him particularly popular at all. And then Elsie's 5-year-old grandson ended up falling into the canal, of course, so Elsie was not very happy with Len.
Did he die?
No, I think it was hooked out.
In 1967, after Len invested £300 in a property deal that went through, Jerry insists they form a limited company and Emily Nugent should do the books. Then young Stanley, returned to Weatherfield to work for his dad and Len nearly dies rescuing him from a fire in the yard.
Such drama.
But Stanley wasn't grateful because he went back home to Nottingham not long after that.
Yeah, I think he realised that he was no good in the building trade.
I think he's probably thought to himself, if I stay on Coronation Street, I'm just going to die just to make drama
for
Len.
Yeah, that was a warning. It was like one of those little fake heart attacks. Exactly. 1968, he got a plumbing contract for the unpopular new maisonettes on the other side of the street. He bought number 9 from Ken Barlow when Ken and Valerie moved over to the maisonettes. He knocked down his old house and expanded the yard there. Also, at that time, Jerry Booth left Weatherfield, but by that time, Len had employed Ray Langton, who was also lodging with him. That doesn't sound very interesting, but what does sound interesting in 1968 was he was suspected of murdering Elsie's new husband, Steve Tanner, after their short marriage hit the rocks.
In 1969, Elsie gives Jack Walker £300 to give to Len to help his debt-ridden business because she knew that he would never accept it from her. However, he decides to use it to start a new life with the town hall clerk, Janet Reed, who was Ken's, later on, his second wife.
Yeah.
Janet ends the relationship when she feels that Len is smothering her, and Len thinks that Elsie is behind Janet's decision, and he gives her a slap. After it is revealed that the money actually came from her, she ends their friendship.
Yeah.
But they end up being friends again.
Yeah, they were kind of friends next year because he was a witness at her wedding to Alan Howard. So 1970 enters into a partnership with Ray. There's lots of different partnerships, business partnerships. I think this is another reason why I don't like this kind of character, because it's all to do with business. It's like all the factory stuff. Partnerships aren't that interesting. He proposed to Anita Reynolds, who was one of the barmaids in that year as well, but he changed his mind when he realised that she was just young. She was young enough to be his daughter. 1972 was when the most memorable kind of romance from for Len showed up, though. Rita Littlewood.
Aww.
The Weatherfield Night. What was he called? Weatherfield Nightingale or something. She was singing in a nightclub, and he'd previously helped her to find accommodation because her home was about to be demolished. So they started seeing each other because she had a common law husband, Harry, and she'd been beaten up by him because he'd suspected there was something going on between Len and Rita. So then, on the opening night of the Capricorn Club, Len was shown up by Rita, who got into a fight with another woman. That I'd like to see. His association with her hurt his chances to become mayor of Weatherfield, though. And then that was when Alf became mayor. But Len became deputy mayor, though, so that's okay.
That's all fine, then, isn't it?
Yeah, but he did split up with Rita over it because of how much she showed him up.
In 1973... excitement, the Capricorn Club was bought by someone who wanted to use it to make pornographic films.
That's
so
hilarious.
Len convinced Rita to leave. I don't know why, because she could have made good money. The pair get back together and he makes her the manager of the cabin, which he just bought. When Len refuses to pay VAT on a job done for a firm that had gone bust before paying them, he ends up in court. And Jerry ends up paying the money and is made a partner along with Len and Ray by the end of the year. Fascinating stuff.
I know, it really is. 1974, Len discovered the Coronation Street was going to be demolished.
No!
But he didn't tell everybody that, of course. Rita wouldn't let him sell the cabin, which was now in her name. Money reasons. And then she told everybody the truth. Emily even threw a brick through Len's window in protest.
And she's never forgot it, and she's still dining out on it to this day.
Yeah.
The time she threw a brick through someone's window.
Up a tree, brick through the window. What a rebel Emily is. Yeah. But anyway, the plan eventually got voted out, as you might have guessed by the fact that Coronation Street is still there
today. Oh, okay, don't spoil it. Len and Rita then got engaged, but he wouldn't commit to a date, so she called it off. And then they start seeing other people, which is not really a good sign of a marriage.
No. 1975, he had a bit of a relationship with Bette Lynch, but she gave him the heave-ho because he said he was only interested in having sex with her.
In 1975?
Yeah.
They're allowed to say sex on television.
That was like the era of
promiscuity.
Yes. Ray moved out of number 9 when he married Deirdre, and Jerry died of a heart attack in 1975 as well. So not a great year for Len.
Harsh.
1976, Rita knocked Len out when he refused to give her time off from the cabin to go to Torquay to sing.
Yeah, good for you.
Yeah, he wanted to sort of control. He was a very controlling kind of guy over Rita, so he wouldn't let her go. He pretended to be sicker than he actually was, though, when he came out of hospital, because he liked Rita looking after him. 1977 was when he actually made an honest woman out of Rita, though. 16.9 million viewers watched that episode, which was the highest rated episode of the 1970s. He begged her not to take a 4-month singing contract in Tenerife, and she was like, well, either I go to Tenerife or you marry me. So,
but she won't give up nightclub singing anyway.
Yeah. He got drunk on Elf Stag Night in 1978.
That's a weird beer, what's that?
What?
He got drunk on our stag night. It's like
a beer. During our stag night. And I think the policeman took him home, and Rita was so disgusted by his behaviour that she refused to or she denied knowing him.
Can you do that? Really?
Hmm. Yeah, but I'm not going to come home drunk from anyone who's stag doing.
Yeah.
He was then taken back to the police station and was accused of making advances on the female police officer in the car. He was found not guilty in court, but it was so scandalous that he lost his position in his political party, and he got in deep trouble with Rita over it. Later on that year, he lost £3,000 of building materials in a fire, and Rita was forced to sing in a second-rate men's club to help earn money.
Indignity.
He took on Eddie Yates on the yard later in that year, when Ray split up from Deirdre and emigrated to Holland.
In 1979, he continued to be a disappointment to Rita, and he only got her a box of chocolates for Christmas.
That was the last straw.
That is terrible. So in 1980, Rita walks out on Len after he refuses to do anything about the alterations she wanted to the house to make it livable, but he finds her in Blackpool 2 months later and promises to be a better husband.
Yeah. Does he do it?
Well, no.
No, not particularly. 1981, They had a bit of an adoption story. Rita wanted children, but they were told they were too old to adopt. But they did become foster parents for a bit. So they had John Spencer, a 13-year-old boy, and then Sharon Gaskell, who Len was particularly fond of. He also rebuilt number 7 that year, which had collapsed in 1965. So there was a gap between numbers 5 and 9 for all that time. He built it up, and then Rita kind of twisted his little finger to let him move in there. 1983, he started an affair with Marjorie Proctor, a widow, and on the way back from seeing her one night, he fell asleep at the wheel and was killed in a crash.
Now, poor Marjorie Proctor.
Why?
Second man she's killed there.
Yeah.
No one thinks about it from Marjorie Proctor's point of view, do they?
Is she a black widow?
Maybe.
Yeah, reading that profile of Len there wasn't too much exciting, was there?
It's all very standard, Corrie.
Yeah, he's kind of considered as being quite a big character from back then in Coronation Street, isn't he? I mean, if you think about Coronation Street in the olden days, he's one of the big names, and he was in, 1,700 episodes, but he didn't seem to do
It's not to do
much.
With what storylines you're in, it's to do with how you play them, because sometimes we read back characters have had quite small parts and going, oh yeah, they were in that storyline. Oh yeah, they were in that storyline. And you just forget because they're so bland that they just suck everything to a black hole.
I don't even know whether was Len, was that Len
I
bland?
Don't know because I've never really watched it with him in, but I'm just saying perhaps.
In my mind, he's kind of more important because he was married to Rita, and that Rita's obviously carried on going all this time. But I think he was a very main character, but just for
he's lost to posterity.
Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe some people can write in and tell us whether Len was actually more interesting than he seems to be. But maybe he's just one of those characters that we don't like. I mean, I think he seems very much like Owen, for example. Owen being a
rough alpha male.
Yeah, which that kind of character doesn't really interest me. But you know, I've appealed to everyone in Corrie.
Sensitive chaps like you.
Twice in a row you told me that on the podcast. How romantic! How sickening! So it was quite sad. What ended up happened to Peter? Oh yeah, you're lovely. I go through people just like you.
What does that mean?
Editors and
job description is my personality. Yeah, so this guy didn't really have a good career on Coronation Street, did he? He was suspended
not behind the scenes.
In 1969 for 2 months because he recorded a film so drunk that he was so drunk at the time that had to be reshot the following week.
Yeah, that whole scene had to be reshot. I think drinking problems continued a bit. There's a couple of quotes on Wikipedia about the incident. Harry Kershaw, the executive producer at the time, said, "Peter Adamson's drunkenness hung around him like an albatross around the programme's neck, and my responsibilities as a producer were beginning to weigh very heavily indeed. At each story conference during this period, we would include the character in our projected plots, hoping that Peter Adamson's problems would miraculously disappear. This was wishful thinking at its most stupid, and it rapidly became evident as matters grew worse that drastic actions needed to be taken."
He wouldn't mince his words there, did he?
No.
He also got in trouble in 1983.
Yeah, this is the final straw for him.
That he was written out of the show. for writing derogatory articles about the show. I don't know what he wrote, but
no, I don't know.
Maybe
actually,
they're all poo heads. Before they could see he could get suspended, though, he was accused of indecently assaulting two young girls in a swimming pool. He was found not guilty, but he later confessed to a freelance reporter who got him drunk the following year that he did do it.
This sounds like it could have been a storyline in Coronation Street, doesn't it?
I was going to say it sounds like it's something that could have happened to somebody on Coronation Street recently, because this is all that's coming out.
Oh, yeah.
All celebs now. He sold his memoirs for £70,000 to help him pay legal bills.
Yeah, I think Granada didn't
well,
help
him. Well, they told him not to say anything.
Yeah, they said don't speak to the press about it, but he did, he sold his memoirs.
So this is all so when he's like, still on the show. All of this happened when he's still on the show.
But it didn't last for long.
Then he last appeared on screen 7 months before the character was killed off, because his character was working away from home.
Yeah.
Following his stint on Coronation Street didn't really go too well for him because of his drinking problems.
Well, he was on the West End for a few years, but roles just started drying up because he had kind of a bad reputation in the biz. He had his drinking problem, and yeah, he kind of fizzled out of show business, which is it's quite sad really, because back in the height of Coronation Street he was probably but a millionaire by today's standards. I mean, he wouldn't have had £1 million back then, but he fell from a big height.
It does say that. He had surgery for bowel cancer in 1990, was declared bankrupt in 1991, and spent the rest of his days living in a rented flat. Where does this come from, this information? Buying cut-price
food sources,
and saving £5 a week towards his own funeral. He died of stomach cancer in 2002, and all he had left in the world was £5,000 for his eldest son, even though he had once been worth
It's really,
millions.
Really sad.
So you say millions there.
Yeah, he was worth millions in modern terms, I think I meant.
Well, either way, he was a rich guy, and he ended up dying in poverty, basically.
It's sad. It's so sad to think that that can happen, and it makes me think, is there anyone on Coronation Street at the moment, like, so a big character that could happen to? Yeah, so I hope not. Final quote from Bill Podmore then about him. This is, to end on a bit more of a positive note, from Bill Podmore. Peter had a great rugged quality, the right face and exactly the right build. His toughness only gave more weight to his acting skills. Off the set, he could be as abrasive as the man he played. It was an underlying part of his nature which he passed on to Len. He turned him into a wonderfully earthy character who didn't mince words, but was never unattractive to the legions of fans. That's kind of a nice thing to say.
Yeah, very tactful.
Yeah, but I mean, that's about all we've got to say about Len Fagleff, isn't it?
Yep.
Had not much legacy for us, but
not really.
But definitely
I'm
there
sure.
is for the programme. He was such a big character. He's just like not the kind of character that I would have wanted to watch. Right, that's enough for Len Fairclough. Let's move on to Cabin for some news. So we'll start the Cabin this week, same as last week almost, by congratulating Catherine Tilsley. She's hit the headlines again this week. Lonely last week we found out that she was pregnant, and then it was revealed in the news this week that she is now engaged to her boyfriend Tom. So congratulations to Catherine Tilsley. What will it be next week? Who knows?
Maybe she'll get married.
Oh, yeah, I don't know when she's supposed to get married. There's not much Coronation Street news again, particularly this week. The closest I got to it was a bizarre story about Coronation Street being mapped out by the Ordnance Survey. So if you go onto their website, or there's plenty of pictures online now, you can now see a very neatly drawn Coronation Street. Does this help you to get an idea of where things are?
Don't need it.
You got it cracked now?
Don't need it.
You got it cracked. Yeah, you can see all the way down Viaduct Street, Coronation Street, Rosamond Street, although it does cut off at the crucial bit of Rosamond Street that everyone wants to know what's down there at the moment, and you can see up to Victoria Street as well. So it's, I mean, if you know what Coronation Street looks like, I don't think there's particularly very many surprises on there, but I'm not sure why they did it particularly. We've got a quote from Rob Andrews from the Ordnance Survey that says, "This has been a great project and highlights Ordnance Survey's commitments to accurately map the rapidly changing face of Great Britain." So I think he just kind of did it for a jolly, maybe.
Well, the thing is, if they're making a map of the country, they need a map of Coronation Street because it's in the country.
But
whether it's a fictional place or not, whether or not it's a set, it's still a place.
I guess so. Well, they used the article as a chance to give some other like bits of trivia about Coronation Streets.
Which is actually quite interesting.
Well, it says there's 87 other Coronation Streets in
their database.
In the UK. Yeah, and 171 Coronation Street. No, Coronation Roads.
Coronation Street Road.
93 Coronation Avenues, 2 Coronation Mews, and 8 Coronation Squares.
Yes. So, but more shockingly to me was the fact that the Rovers Return is a less common pub name, and there's only four others called that in the country.
And we saw one of them, didn't we, when we went there?
That's true, it was one in Manchester.
Yeah.
And there are 54 Woolpacks and 24 Queen Victorias.
Yeah, so that's the Emmerdale and Easter. I'm surprised at the Queen Victoria. I would have thought that there'd be quite a lot of those. That seems maybe like it's more, a common name.
Maybe it's the sort of place that gets updated every time they get a new monarch.
Could be. So yeah, I mean, if you want to, yeah, if you're still not sure about where everything is next to each other on Coronation Street, have a look at that Ordnance Survey map.
Because it didn't help me either.
Because you already knew.
No, when you showed me maps before, it didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah. I still have it in my head. When they're in that builder's yard, I picture it by the bistro for some reason. I never used to with the other builder's yard. It's bizarre. It's the angles. Gemma, tell us a bit about this final news article, which is about related to Coronation Street, tenuously.
It is related. Okay. As many of you may know, is it this week or last week?
Yeah, there was
a leak of nude photographs of celebrities.
Eileen Derbyshire, wow.
This happened on a website called 4chan, which is the den of iniquity of the internet. And I found out about it on Reddit because people were upvoting a perfectly harmless and innocent photograph of Jennifer Lawrence, which it turns out was just of her wearing like a vest top, basically, standing up and smiling at the camera. But it turned out that this was actually a photo that she'd taken on her phone or someone had taken of her that had never been released, and it was her own private photo. And in this thread, people were discussing about the fact that all these nude photographs of poor Jennifer Lawrence had been found. So basically what happened was somebody then released a list of all the celebrities who had these photographs. There was a whole cache of them. It wasn't just Jennifer Lawrence. There were loads and loads of other celebrities. And on that list was Michelle Keegan.
Oh, dear. Okay.
So I heard a rumour where these came from was on the deep web, which is where you go to find out all the criminal things on the internet, which is you have to download special programs or something. I don't really understand it, but it's this thing called Tor or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's a place that you go and you can't be traced. Now, apparently, there's a place on this on there that you only know about if you get invited or you know somebody. But now, obviously, the lid's been blown on it, so everyone knows about it. But apparently, there was a nude celebrity trading ring where you could only buy your way into it if you had a nude photo that you'd had of a celebrity that no one else has seen. So once you had that to trade with somebody, then you could start trading and swapping. So basically, there was this group of like a small number of like hackers who'd managed to find their way onto people's phones to get these nude photos, who were just trading. And because somebody started leaking these photos, then suddenly they became less valuable in this little exclusive trading ring, and so some people started selling them for bitcoins, which is where they all came from, and that's why there's this list of all these celebrities. And so far Michelle Keegan's photos have not been leaked.
No.
But I can tell you that her name was definitely on the list.
Yeah, she's the only Coronation Street
and there were very few other English celebrities on there as well.
Yeah, lots of American ones on there.
And it's kind of debatable as to how this happened. It's something to do with they were stored on the iCloud, which is Apple's backup of all your photos. So whenever you take a photo on your iPhone, it gets automatically uploaded to the iCloud. And apparently, if you can hack very easily into somebody's iCloud just by finding out their email address, which can be quite tricky for celebrities to know their personal private email addresses, and also a piece of information about, like, where was your first pet's name? Where did you go to school? And unfortunately for celebrities, a lot of that information is pretty easy to find.
Yeah.
So if you find out what their email address is and you can find out what the answers to those two are, it's very complicated, I'm not sure I really understand it, then you can get like a PIN number and you can unlock it. Because there's another thing that you can do where you can go to... So one of the pieces of information you need to secure your iCloud is the last four digits of your credit card number. But if you find out their Amazon account, it's the same as their email account that you've already got. You find out their password, Amazon displays the last four digits of any of your cards. So you can get the information that you need to crack into Apple just by looking on Amazon.
It's still complicated,
but unfortunately it's a bit of a security loop. And the way to get around it is to have two-stage authentication set up on your iCloud. So if any of you out there are celebrities and you have nudes on your phone, make sure that you've got the two-step authentication process in order. And also another tip for everybody is to not use the same email accounts for everything and the same passwords.
I think if you're a celebrity and it's a very risky business having naked pictures of you.
Well,
if you got, they are very likely to get
victim
out.
Victim blaming, isn't it? Nobody says, oh, it's your fault you got murdered, you shouldn't have been alive.
All right, fine.
In your own private home, anyone can do what they like. It's nobody's business and you shouldn't be entitled to look at things just because somebody's done it. But anyway.
I'm not remembering wrongly that there were these nude pictures of Michelle Keegan in the bath a year or two ago, were there? Am I making that up? I'm sure there was someone in Coronation Street. Or
to be
was
honest,
it Helen Flanagan? I don't remember.
The way Michelle Keegan's career is going at the moment, I wouldn't be surprised if she was trying to get her nude photos released.
That's a hard. She's only been out of Corrie for a few months.
Well, the thing is, it's made Jennifer Lawrence extremely famous. And the other person who's been kind of notorious out of this is Jessica. I think her name's Jessica Brown Finley. I've forgotten it. I don't know. She was the one in Downton Abbey. She's one of the sisters. She's not in it anymore.
Yeah.
In Downton Abbey. And she was. There were some incredibly filthy videos of her in the act, is what I'm going to say. And she's got it a lot worse than Jennifer Lawrence, who was just basically posing with no bra on.
Hmm.
So there are nude photos of Michelle Keegan somewhere. Someone's got them. The guy who had these photos, it seemed to be a group of different people. The FBI are closing in, and he kept saying, I'm going to release them, I'm going to release them. And then he couldn't, and then he didn't, because he was on the run. So it's possible that they will never see the light of day, but at the same time, if somebody's got them, then it's perfectly possible that more than...
Yeah. Mm.
So that's the grimy world of celebrity nudes that I know everything about.
Yeah, you had a lot to say about that. That was good. You were expert about that.
I'm probably fluffing quite a lot of the details, but in the basic sketch of things, that is what happened.
Mm.
So,
I
wouldn't be surprised if in a couple of years we're talking about the Michelle Keegan nude photo celebrity leak scandal, because, like I said, people have got them.
Watch this space, everybody.
Watch this space. They're gonna come out. I'm sure they will.
I'll keep my fingers crossed. Right, let's end with our feedback.
Feedback section. So we've got an email from Miranda who said... Oh, you better say this.
She says, hi guys, I loved your podcast as usual. So I did.
Yeah, well done. I was listening to it as I made supper, and my hubby laughed at me. I said, this is a married couple who both love Coronation Street so much that they podcast about it. It would be so nice if you would start watching Corrie with me. He laughed, but I'll tell you what, when I have it on, it almost always happens that as he's walking through the room, he'll stop and stand there and watch for a few minutes. And then ask me questions about it. So perhaps I can make him into a Corrie convert after all.
You just know that Miranda's going to be showing this to him right now.
Yeah.
Miranda's
Listen,
husband.
It's about you.
Hello, Miranda's husband.
I have to say,
it's not that bad, watch
what
it.
What a handsome and intelligent chap Miranda's husband is. And what a lucky lady Miranda is to have him.
You should just give Coronation Street a try. It's
that
quite
might help
good.
Yeah, yeah.
She's not asking you to podcast about it.
No, and Miranda is also an insightful and exciting listener to have, so thank you very much for writing in.
Yes,
you're both
you.
A fabulous couple.
The email continues though. I think Michael mentioned this before, but it is so weird to me that Craig is the way he is with his mum and Kirk.
Yeah.
Now don't get me wrong, Kirk is a great guy and treats them both like gold, so of course he should be happy. But after they got engaged, when Beth dragged Kirk up the stairs to have her way with them, what was up with that big huge grin on Craig's face as he enthused about what would be the best holiday ever? What teenage boy wants to even think about his mum riding the Baloney pony? Let alone know when she's doing it because she announces it. Weird.
I told you she was insightful, didn't I say?
Yeah.
That is weird.
That was weird. I commented on that when we were watching it. Bizarre.
Don't get the impression that's what teenage boys in Britain are like.
It's nice that they're a close family and everything, but yeah.
But there's such a thing as too close.
Mm.
So she also continues, I'm finding bits with Peter rather difficult to watch, actually, even though he is not hard on the eyes, though I know not all agree. He's so desperate and in such a bad situation, and in reality, alcoholism is such a serious problem and a real illness. Chris Gascoigne is an amazing actor and really brings it home every time.
He is a really good actor. I mean, the Peter's never going to be anywhere near my top 10 favourite characters on Coronation Street or anything, but I do appreciate he's done a really good job acting this. I mean, he's so believable.
He is Peter, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely.
I was quite mad at Leanne when she pointed out that Peter had been drinking in front of Simon. She could have waited and brought him to task about it later, but to cause a big dramatic scene in front of the poor lad isn't going to help. I'm not excusing Peter at all. What an idiotic thing to do. But she seems to more out of spite to him than to protect Simon sometimes.
That's Leanne all over, really, isn't it? Spiteful. She just wants to get one over Peter. She wants to sort of score points against him.
She gets too caught up in how self-righteous she is and how wrong everyone else is, and she doesn't stop to think about whether it's necessarily appropriate to be the morally, you know, upstart and point it out all the time. You don't need to point it out.
Yeah, she should have waited until they'd gone home or something, because, I mean, it was big and brave of Simon to actually go to the prison, because he hadn't wanted to originally.
Guy.
And
it's just,
she's caught it.
Now he's never going to want to go to prison again.
Oh, and Miranda also ended off telling us all about calorie-free maple syrup, which we were talking about. We are going to have some more of it. Our pancakes, our post-podcast pancakes last week were so nice, we're going to try it again. She says because she's Canadian, she's qualified to comment.
Okay.
I don't think the idea of it is weird at all.
Oh, good.
Most people I know find real maple syrup so expensive that they often buy the maple-flavoured concoction. And this is in Canada. I myself will splurge and get some nice maple syrup every once in a while, but I usually see the cheaper honey. An interesting factoid. The last time I was in a bigger city, Winnipeg to be exact, I was at a tea store and they were selling birch syrup, syrup made from birch trees. I'm interested in trying it, and I have a feeling Ken would be too.
See, this fascinates me. Do you remember I found out about what you can make syrup out of lots of different trees?
Oh yeah, what was the other thing you said the other day? I thought you mentioned another tree. I don't remember.
Well, there's lots of different trees you can make it from, and some of them are better than others, and obviously maple trees are the best ones because they give off the most syrup. But you can, as long as it's not poisonous, because that's bad, you can make tree syrup from lots of different trees, and it totally fascinates me. I would love to try birch syrup.
All the syrups, definitely.
All the syrups.
Kenwood as well.
Lie me down with a funnel and I will drink whatever syrup from a tree you've confined.
Once the diet's
over.
Because
I'm on a diet and I can only think about eating sweet things. So that's quite interesting. Yes, birch syrup.
And thank you for writing, Miranda.
And thank you for validating our consumption of calorie-free maple syrup.
Yeah, and Miranda's husband, you know what you got to do now.
Exactly.
Take one for the team and watch curry. It's quite good.
Yes, exactly.
Facebook message from Christina. Would you like to read this one out, Gemma?
Yes, she said, thank you for doing the backstory of Jim McDonald. I have been a bit confused this week because I cannot remember Steve and Jim falling out. Thanks to your podcast, I now vaguely remember the argument.
They haven't explained it very well on the show particularly, have they? Because it is a bit, like I said, a bit weak, the fact that Steve is so against seeing Jim.
It's a constant balancing act, isn't it, between explaining things for new viewers and then sort of teaching the old viewers how to suck eggs, basically, by going over the same things. But yeah, I don't think it was really obvious to anybody
why they fell out and why Jim had said, get away from me. And it was all because of Liz not going to the trial, as far as I can work out.
So to be fair, it was the last time he was on the show, but I mean, how long ago was that?
2 or 3 years, I think.
She continues, talking of Steve, I thought it was great seeing Simon Gregson doing some serious acting. It has been a while.
Yes.
I am in heaven at the moment because Jim and Peter are two of my favourite characters. I know I shouldn't, but I love it when Jim loses his temper.
So do I. He sort of really holds the screen. He's like, very watchable.
Oh God, this is Christina. You know how much you inflated Michael's ego with this next comment. Michael, if Charlie Lawson ever loses his voice, you could step in and do a voiceover. Your Irish accent is very impressive.
Do you know,
Christina, how happy that made Michael? And he was glowing all day long, and now he's all puffed up.
Yeah, we'll get some Irish people writing in now
saying
that actually.
No!
I can say a couple of phrases like Jim.
You're very good, aren't you? She finishes with,
this
finally,
is quite prophetic, actually.
Finally, I am dreading the cricket scenes. I have a feeling it is going to be predictable OTT comedy. I hope I'm wrong. You are wrong, because it wasn't funny at all. It didn't even attempt to be a comedy, did it?
No, Deb was being pretty OTT.
It was just
really
lame banter. It wasn't even comedy.
Some of it was really trying to be like, with Deb was being like too far off the back of the field, and he was like, oh, can I come forward?
Yeah, but I think Christina's talking about what I thought it was going to be, like quite slapstick.
Mm.
But it wasn't slapstick, it was just lame.
Yeah. They didn't gel together very well. No, they didn't. Those characters, which is a shame because a lot of them are in the same family.
Yeah. Whoops.
We got, oh yeah, this is something from about that movie that Gail and Michael were watching. We've got
Thank
another
you.
Suggestion.
Another one, good.
Karen thinks that it is The Notebook, which she okay. said that she blubbed over when she was watching it with her daughter Audrey, named after Audrey Roberts.
But, well, I she's don't know convinced if... it was The Notebook, because the last time I blubbed like that over the end of the movie, I was watching The Notebook, is yeah. what she says.
She's convinced. I've never heard of The Notebook, so
oh my goodness,
might be right.
It's a famous chick flick. And I was going to summarise what happens, but then I read what the plot was, and it's too complicated, and it's about old people talking about when they were young, and one of them's got dementia, and then stop listening if you don't want to hear a spoiler.
Somebody dies at the end.
They both die at the end.
Oh, both of them.
Which is very sad.
It is. That is very tragic indeed. We had a question of the week this week, but we didn't get many answers to it because I forgot to put it on Facebook. I just had it on Twitter. We wanted to know whether Carla was right to have stayed in Weatherfield rather than jetting off on a plane. Because I wasn't sure at the time whether she was going to go off or not, but I think she probably did do the right thing. Cam says, though, she should have got onto the plane. What good has Peter brought her lately? And Sam said that she was right to stay. If she had gone, she wouldn't have enjoyed herself because Peter would have been on her mind. Whilst Cat Lady Biker remarked that being a week behind in Canada and unaware of the circumstances, but still cannot imagine how the plane isn't the winner. So, a couple
Fair
of different
enough.
Opinions
I'd
there.
Love to go on holiday.
Yeah, get away Again. From Peter. Yeah. So that's it for another week of Coronation Street. No, we've got Conversation Street, should I say. We've got some other way that you can contact us now. I've been doing a little bit of tinkering with our Skype, and you can now leave us a voicemail on Skype if you'd like to appear on the show.
Yes, please do.
Yeah. If you
We won't pick up the phone and answer, don't worry about
it. No, we'll just let it ring and go, woo.
You can phone in and just leave your little message. And then we will come along, pick it up and put it in our show.
Yeah. If you search for Conversation Street on Skype, you should be able to find us. I don't understand how Skype works particularly, but hopefully that's all it takes.
See, I would be nervous to phone into a show. So what I would do is I would record myself on my phone and then I would play my recording into the computer.
That's too complicated.
No, it's not complicated, because then you know you've said it properly and you can record it as many times as you like.
Oh yeah, that's true.
So that's what
true.
I'm saying. So if you're nervous and you think you want to phone in but you're nervous and you think you might fluff it up, just record it onto your voice memo on your phone or something and then play it back into your computer after the beep and then we'll pick it up.
Yeah.
Or easier than that, you could record it on your phone and then email it to us at conversationstreet@gmail.com.
Yes, which you can also use to write to us, but we would like to have some audio comments. It's always we good would. To get those. Yeah, so you can email us at that address, or you can go on our blog at conversationstreet.podbean.com and leave us a comment there. Don't forget to review us on iTunes if you haven't done that yet. Follow us on Twitter, we're @conversationstrew, or you can like us on Facebook and get involved with bits of chat that are going on there. So that's it for another week. Thanks for listening.
Pancake time.
Time for pancakes.
We'll catch you next week.
Yeah, oh, there's an episode of Coronation Street on Sunday, by the way, if you didn't know.
What, so this tomorrow?
Tomorrow, there is an extra one. It will have cricket, that's all I'm saying. The music for this episode came from podcastthemes.com.